This is a special edition of Macro Voices with hedge fund manager Eric Townsend, the premier financial podcast targeting professional finance, high net worth individuals, family offices, and other sophisticated investors. Now, for this special edition of Macro Voices, here's hedge fund manager Eric Townsend.
Macro Voices All-Stars Episode 101 was recorded on April 13th, 2020. I'm Eric Townsend. This episode of Macro Voices All-Stars is brought to you by TopTradersUnplugged.com, the leading podcast when it comes to quant and rules-based investing. I'll tell you how to claim a free copy of their new guide to the best investing books ever written at the end of this episode. Returning today is our good friend, Julian Brigden, founder of MI2 Partners. Julian, I want to start with the dollar index, because this is a subject that I don't mind admitting, I'm kind of baffled on what's going on. It feels to me like every time there's liquidity that is interjected into the market by the Fed, there's a panic reaction that's down in the dollar. But then everybody kind of wakes up and says, hey, wait a minute, all this stuff going on in the world, maybe it really is dollar positive after all, which is the view that I've had. How do you see this dollar? Where do you think we're going from here? What really should we be looking for as a resolution to this uncertainty we're seeing in the direction of the dollar index?
Hey, Eric, and thanks very much for having me back on the show. Look, I think this is the $64 trillion question. I think if we can figure out where we are in the dollar cycle, I think we can sort of figure out to some extent where we are in the broad market cycle. We've had what we at MI2 refer to as the napalm run. So the napalm run is typically, and this I guess is the good news, the last stage of a dollar cycle. It is typically, you go back and you look at all the cycles since the 70s, you kind of, you know, the dollar falls, it reflates assets, you get the Latin American bubbles in the 70s, you get the Asian bubbles in the 90s. Then the dollar gets down to a level where the frothiness of the weakness of the dollar creates problems, whether it's inflation under Volcker, whether it's just excessive dollar weakness under Sakakibaru in the 90s. The dollar then starts to rise. It comes up to a certain level. You get your crisis, Latin American debt crisis, the Asian tiger crisis. The Fed backs off, you know, in the same way that they did in, say, 2016, this time around. The dollar takes a pause for breath, and then it kind of does its final move up. And that's the napalm run. It's the risk-off dollar rally. So you have a falling risk assets at the same time you have a rising dollar. Highly, highly destructive. And that's where we use the analogy of a napalm run, because pretty much when it's over, all you're left with is a bunch of charred bodies and some smoking holes. Now, as I said, the good news is that's typically the last stage in the dollar cycle, and then the dollar starts a multi-year, multi-percent decline, usually 20-25%, typically. Now, we clearly had that, or we could still be in it, that napalm run. But I think the big thing for me is that policymakers seem to be cognizant of the risks. So we saw the Fed roll out swap lines to the sort of G10 peers in 3 days in a move which during the GFC took them a year. We saw them launch this repo program, which really only started last week, which will enable central banks to repo treasuries with the Fed, pick up dollar funding and distribute that to their own kind of corporate sector. We've seen moves by the IMF potentially to extend a program for up to $1 trillion to lend to people. And while it isn't fully working, we have seen some improvements in dollar funding costs. So if you look at things like the basis swaps, which are just a metric of relative funding between two currencies, those have started to improve. And in fact, now it costs you more to borrow euros than it does to borrow dollars, and the same within sterling. But the point is central banks have been quite quick to come and, or policymakers have been quite quick to come and address that. Have they done enough? We will see. There are some programs coming out this week which may help to ease up some of the financial conditions in those things yet again. And so I'm hopeful, Eric, that we might have seen the end to the dollar rally. I think if funding starts to loosen, and there's a difference between these programs and the mechanics of funding, because the banks do have some constraints as how they act as intermediaries for this central bank liquidity. But I'm quite hopeful that if we start to see LIBOR rates come down, as with a couple of the programs, or one in particular the Fed's rolling out this week, that you could start to see the dollar start to come down. We've taken a stab at being actually short dollars against a few currencies. A few weeks ago, we bought cable. We recommended people buying cable just above 115. We took a stab at going short dollar MEX recently and some other ones as well. So we'll see. And I think bigger picture, I'm actually pretty dollar bearish, I'll be honest with you. And that's because I know there's all this dollar overseas funding problems, but a lot of this dollar debt issued by foreign companies is owned by their own banking system. So if you look at Brazil, it's a lot of Brazilian banks who own, or Brazilian pension funds who own, you know, Brazilian corporate debt issued in dollars. So I think if the Central Bank of Brazil has the access to the liquidity lines, and, you know, we saw the Indonesians draw down on a big amount of this repo line last week, they're going to use that to keep their own state champions, who are these guys who've issued this dollar debt, alive, because they don't want it knocking onto their own balance sheet. So I'm actually not so worried about the dollar debt that's been issued. I'm actually worried about what happens in a world where the Fed is continuing to expand their balance sheet, and they're doing it at a much more rapid rate than, say, the ECB or the BOJ. They've got to backstop this whole slew of different programs. And that makes the creditworthiness of the US, or certainly supply of dollars, very broad. And then you have to start thinking about, what do you as a foreign creditor, and remember, there are two sides to the dollar demand and supply thing. Yes, foreigners have borrowed a lot of dollars, but we've also borrowed a lot of funding from the rest of the world in order to fund our current account deficit. Okay, so what do foreigners need to buy to keep us being able to, as the reserve currency, run a big budget deficit, run a current account deficit? And the answer is they have to buy US assets. So US stocks, well, maybe those are still attractive. But as you said earlier, before we got into the thing, you know, we've seen a decent rally. Do you really want to be buying more at these kind of levels? And then you've got to look at the broad economy and say, you know, just how sexy is the US going to be looking if we're running at 20% unemployment? And more importantly, do you want to take treasury risk? Like, we're going to be blowing out our deficit in terms of the budget. The Fed is going to be expanding the balance sheet. And more importantly, the Fed is going to be capping the rise of bond yields through de facto yield curve control, as we've seen, you know, which the Japanese explicitly do. We're sort of implicitly doing it. That's why treasuries are not reacting to this rally in the equity market, because the Fed is buying everything. And to my mind, how do I feel as a foreigner, where I'm obliged to keep recirculating funding into the US system, if I'm getting 75 basis points in a treasury in a country where the budget deficit is blowing out disproportionately and the Fed is printing a lot of money? I don't know. I don't know whether I'd automatically reinvest that money. And if I don't, the thing that has to give is the dollar has to take the strain.
Julian, a lot of people have said this is a bear market rally in the stock market, that there's too much false hope that the whole crisis is going away tomorrow, when in reality, even if there were some kind of miracle cure, the economic damage has already been done. Tens of thousands of businesses have already failed. So is this a bear market rally? Is it time to short the S&P here? How do you see the equity market?
We'd recommend it to people to cover shorts back on kind of the 24th. You know, personally, I'll be buying a few selective things because I think there is a lot of liquidity in the system. I think we're coming up to some very big levels, Eric. You know, 2850, 2900, there's a gap in the S&P cash chart. You know, that would be a classic thing to kind of fill and then roll over. Here's the only thing that I'm beginning to question. Now, I admit, even though we covered our shorts, I didn't get long enough because I thought there would probably be a retest the lows, because to your point, the economic damage is profound. I mean, how people can nonchalantly talk about 20% unemployment just worries the bejesus out of me. I mean, I just, you know, those are almost Great Depression kind of levels of unemployment. So I think the economic damage is profound. I think it's going to take us a long, long time to work it out. To your point, I think this assumption of a V-shaped recovery is ridiculous. However, I do wonder whether it's possible that the sheer quantity of liquidity added to the system can just obfuscate the fundamentals. So could you and I, you know, talked for many, many years, and you and I have, you know, I put out previously in the past charts where I've shown the relationship between the Fed's balance sheet and asset prices, in particular stock prices. And I think there can be a case for saying that you could actually get a divergence opening up between the fundamentals and the liquidity. And in that environment, in a time frame which certainly through, let's say, until the autumn, when I think there's a natural possibility that we see a resurgence of this virus, that if you look at the narrative may be getting relatively better. Now, I do want to emphasize that relatively better. So in other words, you know, maybe the next initial claims is only 3 million, right? That's bloody horrible on top of the, you know, sort of 15, 16 million that we've seen so far. But it's better than 6, which is what it was last week and the week before, where we, on balance, are not closing things down, but potentially opening them. And that makes me think that possibly when you add that to liquidity, doesn't mean I want to buy right here and right now, Eric, but it does suggest to me that maybe we don't see new lows. We don't see new lows, at least until, let's say, we get to, you know, October, and then suddenly, let's see, we get another burst of the virus. We realize that, oh, you know, we've gone from 20% unemployment to, let's say, 12, but we're not going to 10, but the next print is 14, because to your point, we've lost a slew of businesses and structurally those people aren't hiring back. And even the businesses that have come back have realized, oh, actually, I managed to function reasonably well as a business with 20% of my workforce not being able to log in from home. So maybe when I come back, I don't actually need the period, end of story.
Well, Julian, I can't thank you enough for another terrific All-Stars appearance. We look forward to getting you back in a few more weeks. Listeners, in the meantime, you can follow Julian at JulianMI2 on Twitter. This episode of Macro Voices All-Stars was made possible by TopTradersUnplugged.com, the leading podcast on quant and rules-based investing. Be sure to claim your free copy of their recently updated guide to the best investing books ever written at TopTradersUnplugged.com/macro guide. And if you haven't heard it yet, be sure to check out my full-length interview with Niels Kastrup Larsen on trend following strategies, which is linked in your Research Roundup email. For the Macro Voices Podcast Network, I'm Eric Townsend.
That concludes this edition of Macro Voices. Be sure to tune in each week to hear feature interviews with the brightest minds in finance and macroeconomics. Please register your free account at macrovoices.com. Once registered, you'll receive our free weekly Research Roundup email containing links to supporting documents from our featured guests and the very best free financial content our volunteer research team could find on the internet each week. You'll also gain access to our free research library. And the more registered users we have, the more we'll be able to recruit high-profile feature interview guests for future programs. So please register your free account today at macrovoices.com if you haven't already. You can subscribe to Macro Voices on iTunes to have Macro Voices automatically delivered to your mobile device each week free of charge. Macro Voices is presented for informational and entertainment purposes only. The information presented on Macro Voices should not be construed as investment advice. Always consult a licensed investment professional before making investment decisions. The views and opinions expressed on Macro Voices are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of the show's hosts or sponsors. Macro Voices, its producers, sponsors, and hosts, Eric Townsend, shall not be liable for losses resulting from investment decisions based on information or viewpoints presented on Macro Voices.